Hi, and welcome to Zed Games. Recorded live at 4ZZZ Studios in Brisbane and broadcast nationally over the Community Radio Network, Zed Games brings you the latest gaming news, reviews, and interviews from across Australia and around the world.
You are listening to Zed Games, Australia's most beloved gaming radio show. Joining me in the studio for this episode, he's more of an Xbox. Well, I'm kind of an Atari. Mr. Razor.
Hey.
There he is.
Yep.
That game he plays just ain't fair. Jody McGregor.
Hi, Lee.
How's it going?
Good, how are you?
Yeah, not too bad. You see me driving around town with the girl you love.
And I'm like...
Yeah.
Yep.
Forget you.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're a radio show talking about video games, as we always do, as you, dear listener, want to listen to. What are we talking about on this episode, Razor?
Jody, you've been playing a first-person horror game called Daylight.
Yeah, one of many first-person horror games around at the moment. It's all about scaring you and not giving you any guns.
Sounds like a hell of a lot of fun, I guess. And Lee, you and I have been playing a game called Child of Light.
Yes, we have, which is the exact opposite of that game, apart from the fact that you don't get any guns. They have that in common.
Yeah, that's my favourite genre of games, don't get any guns.
Yes.
Sure.
So a whimsical storybook tale told through rhyme. We will talk about that later on in the episode.
Looking forward to it. But let's kick this episode off as usual with the weekend gaming news headlines. Mr. Jody?
Neversoft, the studio behind the Tony Hawk series of games and Guitar Hero, has been absorbed by Call of Duty developer Infinity Ward. The two studios collaborated for last year's Call of Duty Ghosts, and the decision has now been made to permanently amalgamate them. The new super studio will retain Infinity Ward's name and branding, while the Neversoft name and logo will be permanently retired after 20 years.
That's a bit sad. End of an era.
Yeah, I'm never going to get that skateboarding guitar game I wanted.
That would have been so good. Are you guitar, like skateboarding on the guitar?
No, skateboarding with a guitar, so you get to play solos while you grind.
Okay.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
Ollies. Yes. That's a thing, right?
Yeah, that's a thing that the young folk do.
Cool.
Yeah. I'm sad that they're retiring the logo. Do you guys remember the Neversoft logo?
With the nail through the eye?
Yeah, an eyeball with a nail through it. I mean, that's awesome.
Classy.
Yeah.
That's
very 90s.
And also, I loved the Tony Hawk games back in the day.
Mm.
Yeah, I've actually got more affection for Neversoft than Infinity Ward, as unpopular as an opinion that may be. That's just my personal take.
Not so much in this room, yeah. I don't think.
Yeah, you're out on a limb there, Ray.
Yeah, it's a shame that they didn't try to create an amalgam name and logo instead, you know, infinitely soft. That would be, you know, everyone would want to work there, right?
Yeah.
John
Carmack, the man who co-created seminal first-person shooter Doom and founded id Software, has been accused by ZeniMax of stealing intellectual property. Carmack left the ZeniMax-owned id Software last year to work for Oculus VR after he was told that the company would no longer support virtual reality projects. ZeniMax have told Oculus that they need to work out a deal to license the allegedly stolen code or prepare for a legal battle. A statement by ZeniMax provided to tech blog Engadget reads in part, "The proprietary technology and know-how Mr. Carmack developed when he was a ZeniMax employee and used by Oculus are owned by ZeniMax." Oculus VR has rigorously denied the claims, saying, "We are disappointed but not surprised by ZeniMax's actions, and we will prove that all of its claims are false. There is not a line of ZeniMax code or any of its technology in any Oculus products." Furthermore, Oculus claims that an in-development virtual reality version of Doom 3 was cancelled after Oculus refused ZeniMax's demands for a non-dilutable stake in their company during negotiations in 2012. Oculus is currently in the process of closing a $2 billion acquisition deal with social media giant Facebook.
Now, I think that we are all qualified to speak on this, especially when it comes to contract law. So, Razor, if you would, summarize this for our listeners.
Basically, looks like John wanted to do some VR work. The company that he worked for didn't want him to. He jumped ship, and and they were like, "All right, you know, you go work on your stupid little VR thing. Go have fun with that. That's going nowhere." Fast forward a couple of years, Facebook buys Oculus for $2 billion. All of a sudden, his employers come back. Oh, wait up. Come back now. That's our shit you got there. we were totally invested in that. We knew the future of VR, you know. We're forward thinking.
Yeah.
It looks like that's what they're doing. It's a shameless cash grab. They didn't support it in the start. Now that there's actually a future involved, it just looks like they're trying to get some money out of it.
So now, Razor, you are not a lawyer, and therefore you are unable to give legal advice.
That's
but
right.
That was sound legal grasp of the matter. And I feel that after that, you pretty much are a lawyer.
Yeah.
Yes.
Also, Bethesda, who are another studio owned by ZeniMax, have also been they've been dicks in the past as far as, you know, intellectual property goes. As we recall, maybe last year or the year before, they went after Mojang, the creators of Minecraft, because they wanted to put out a game called Scrolls, which they believed infringed on their games, the Elder Scrolls.
Mm. So it's all connected.
Yeah, so they're just a bunch of, you know, people that are throwing their weight around, trying to get money where they don't deserve it.
So you listeners, you've heard it here first, straight from the mouth of Razor, who is pretty much the Attorney General at this point.
Details of the next Call of Duty game have emerged, including a new trailer that is viewable online. The game will be called Call of Duty Advanced Warfare and is set in the year 2054. Actor Kevin Spacey is involved and has been motion captured for a significant role in the campaign. Players will don exosuits, armored robotic suits that provide superhuman agility and cloaking abilities similar to those found in the Crysis series. The launch date has been given as the 4th of November this year.
Awesome.
So everyone's shocked by that, right? Everyone's just like, oh my god, another Call of Duty game a year after the previous one? What an amazing piece of news.
Yeah, but they've added robot suits now.
Yeah, they have.
Yeah, I think they've kind of done the same kind of things the last 3 or 4 years now, the kind of Black Ops-y secret agent kind of thing.
The last Black Ops was also set in the future and had robot suits.
Yeah. Well,
and
this
horses.
This one has Kevin Spacey in it.
Yeah, that's true.
Totally different.
Yes.
Got Kevin Spacey in it.
I think the multiplayer could be cool, though. I mean, everyone's got sweet exosuits that lets them jump, like, you know, a million feet in the air. Cloaking devices. That could bring a new element to the first-person shooter multiplayer thing.
Mm-hmm.
It did look like there were, like, hover bikes or something in that trailer, so that could make it slightly different.
I do like hover bikes.
Yeah.
And hoverboards.
Yeah.
Mm. Would you be more interested if it were a hoverboard instead of a hover bike, Jody?
If you could play the guitar while you're on it, yes.
Okay. What if it was the pink hoverboard from Back to the Future?
Sold.
Done.
Money down.
Yes.
The crowdfunding campaign for a Shaq Fu, A Legend Reborn, has met its target goal of $450,000 and is scheduled for release on PS3, PS4, Xbox 360, Xbox One, and the Wii U consoles. The game is an official sequel to the 1994 Sega Mega Drive title Shaq Fu, which starred former American basketball star Shaquille O'Neal and is commonly referred to as one of the worst games ever made.
Fools and their money.
I don't know. I saw the trailer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd play it. He beats up ninjas.
Yeah, it was a pretty good trailer.
Yeah, huh?
But he is a multimillionaire, and this is his vanity project, and people paid $450,000 to let a multimillionaire have a video game about himself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Some of those people, like the top-end rewards where you're paying hundreds of dollars, you get to have dinner with Shaq.
Yeah.
He pays for the dinner.
That's nice. Is that the $20,000 one?
It's like the $250 one, I think.
No.
Is it the $2,000 one?
Because there was a $20,000 one as well.
Right.
And there were others.
That's
there
the was... one where you just get to live with Shaq for a year.
That would be great. Just in his shadow.
You just follow him around for the rest of his life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There was one that really annoyed me, though, which was that for a certain, I think it was close to $10,000, you would be able to come in and work for free as a concept artist on this video game, which is the worst thing in the world. Don't ever do that. I hope no one picked that up, but I know, based on the fact that a lot of people paid too much money to see this happen, someone was really excited about coming to be not paid to provide concept art for a video game. And I hate them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think I'm the only person in the world who liked the original Shaq Fu as well.
I haven't even played it.
Yeah. I rented it a couple times as a child on my Mega Drive, and it didn't come with instructions, and I was determined to learn all of the special moves because it was just a fighting game. It was terrible. And it was mostly Shaq fighting different types of goblin. I remember one of them was pink and looked kind of nude and had big teeth. And it had moves of a sort that I can't remember. And there was another one that was a goblin, except he was wearing a brown robe. I think there was another goblin. He has an issue with goblin things, okay. I think. And so this is kind of a departure. There weren't that many ninjas in Shaq Fu. It was mostly grotesqueries.
Well, it sounds like an improvement then.
Maybe. Has Shaq, you know, travelled too far from his roots? That's the real question. Ray, step in on this.
I shall not be buying Shaq Fu, A Legend Reborn. I mean, who cares about Shaq these days? He was hot property back, what, in 1993? I mean, he had a cool logo.
Now he's kitsch. It's ironic.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't get it.
Maybe you haven't seen some of his incredible film work, like Kazam.
Oh, wasn't he in, like, Man of Steel or something? Oh,
yes.
No, Steel.
Steel, yeah.
That was a bit of a stinker, wasn't it?
Well, surely he's learned his lesson, and Shaq Fu is going to be right in the upper tiers of Metacritic when it comes out.
Yeah, didn't you see their slogan? They're not going to foo it up.
Nice.
See?
Yeah.
They know they're doing.
They
obviously.
Do. Yes.
I mean, this guy's got millions of dollars, presumably.
Yes.
Why doesn't he just hang on to his dignity as well? He can afford to do that.
Maybe, once again, you haven't seen his films Steel or Kazam, where he's a genie.
Oh.
A rapping genie. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He has no dignity left. And if anything, at least playing a video game about himself where he beats up ninjas might allow him to pretend that he has dignity.
Okay. So we, the public, are funding this game for Shaq so that he can just play it himself and no one else is going to play it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He could probably spend less money to get people to dress up as ninjas that he could legitimately beat the hell out of. It would be quicker. He wouldn't have to wait around a year. I don't see why he doesn't do that.
Yeah.
I hope that was one of the options. You paid like $20,000 and Shaq beats the hell out of you while you're dressed as a ninja.
Cool.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Listeners, if you would like Razor to dress up as a ninja so that Shaq can beat the hell out of him, subscribe to this station to the tune of $20,000 and we will make this happen.
Sweet. All right. Thanks for that, Lee. Jody, you have been playing a first-person horror game for the PC called Daylight.
Yes, I have. There's a whole bunch of these first-person horror games around at the moment, and they all do the same thing of making the protagonist kind of a wuss, which is great. There are no weapons, and your response to being chased by something awful in the dark is to run away like a person in a horror movie actually would, which I like. I like a horror game where you're actually on the wrong foot and not, you know, collecting a pistol so that you can collect a shotgun so you can collect a rifle. I much prefer it when games like Amnesia just force you to hide in a closet because there's something out there in the dark with you. And that's the kind of game that Daylight is. It starts out, and it starts out really well, with you waking up in an abandoned hospital and all you've got with you are a smartphone, and then you can find some glow sticks and some flares to provide light. And your smartphone also has a little map on it and gives you... you keep in touch with a spooky old man who's sort of guiding you. And that's all you've got. So when things start scurrying around in the shadows out there in this abandoned hospital, all you can do is run away.
Right.
And it's really immersive and scary at first. But it's one of those games where at a certain point you see behind the curtain and you see the rules and the mechanics and you see how the game is built. And then you just know exactly what it's up to and what it's going to do next. Once you see how the rules work, it just repeats those rules for the rest of the game. So every series of, you know, darkened rooms that you're in, you're stuck. There's a dead end, this mystical lock that you can't get past. And you have to find six clues, like notes, scattered around, a little bit like Slender. You're just looking for bits of paper, and they have diary fragments on them or spooky warnings, or they might be bits of hospital administration with clues about the backstory. And once you find six of these things, a sigil appears, which is some kind of item that has personal significance. It's tied into the backstory. It might be a doll or a Bible. And that's how you open the mystical lock and you get to the next series of darkened rooms where you have to find another six things and then another sigil and then open another lock and then just do the same thing again. And that's it. That's the entire game, is just a sequence of doing those things in slightly different locations.
But the game is randomly generated. Does this bring a kind of like an unpredictability to it that adds replay value at all?
It does make it unpredictable, but it also forces it to reveal its hand. When you walk into rooms, sometimes a random thing will happen, like you might hear a woman screaming in the distance, or a bit of furniture might move, a light bulb will flicker and explode, or a cat will meow somewhere. And you realize pretty quickly, because of the way they're timed, they're always when you're walking into a new room, that these things are just part of the random procedural generation. They're just things that happen at random. You're never going to find that cat. You're never going to find out who's screaming. They're just things put in at random. And so you know that they're fake and you stop being afraid of them pretty quickly.
So the randomness was introduced to change up that feeling of repetition that you get if you're playing a horror game and you encounter failure, or even if you're just replaying it, you're supposed to be able to get a whole new experience. But here, the randomness, because there's not enough of those assets, it takes away from that experience and makes it feel samey again?
Yeah, and it's sometimes literally samey, because the mazy locations that you're walking through have rooms that are placed in a random order, but sometimes that means that you just encounter the same room two or three times. Like, here's an information desk, and at the end of this hallway, there's another information desk. The locations wind up not making any sense, because you leave the maternity ward and walk into another maternity ward, because the random generation has just plonked down a weird variety of rooms.
Maybe it's a nightmarish dreamscape, Jody.
Yeah, maybe, but also it just doesn't make for a scary or interesting location. What makes it scary, though, and it is actually genuinely scary, is that the things that move around in the dark, in the shadows, these ghosts, have a pattern to when they show up. There's like a meter at the bottom of the screen, shaped like a moon, that slowly goes from a new moon to a full moon, and then back again. And the fuller it gets, the more frequently these ghosts will appear. They're sort of like old-worldy ladies in bonnets with hollow eyes and mouths, and they do look genuinely creepy.
I am afraid of bonnets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, then you won't like these.
Ooh.
And they make like a chattering noise as they come up behind you.
Like,
and
give us an example.
I can't make the noise. It's inhuman.
Ah.
It's really creepy. And your phone sort of buzzes with static,
right,
as they approach as well, which is sort of nicked from Silent Hill, but it's effective and it works. So you know that they're coming because you can see, you know, the static, and you can see the meter at the bottom of the screen slowly filling up. So although that's something that repeats, just like everything in this game repeats, the fact that that repeats builds anticipation. You know that they're coming, and so you're more afraid of them, which is the opposite of how the other things work, where you know, oh, that's just a thing that keeps happening. But the ghosts are actually really frightening. Your only thing you can do is light a flare to drive them off, but you have a limited number of flares, so you just wind up running away from them a lot. And once you find that sigil, that doll or Bible or whatever that unlocks the next door, you can't light any flares until you make it through the door, and that's always when the moon starts filling up and you know that more of them are coming. So there's always this build-up to a point where a bunch of ghosts are going to be chasing you or blocking your path, and you just have to run like a maniac towards where the locked door is, and then make it to a place on the far side of the door where you're going to be safe and you can breathe again. And then it slowly builds up. And that actually works as a way of sort of manipulating you and making you feel tense.
Hmm.
Is there an end to this horror? Is there a way to escape the haunted house?
Yeah, there is. There's several locations. You work your way from this abandoned hospital into an abandoned prison, which is apparently next door to it, and then through a sewer, because of course every game has a sewer level, and then out into a forest and then to freedom. The forest is actually, it comes too late in the game to really save it, but it's actually the most interesting location because it's not just a sequence of rooms that look very similar to the room you were just in. You're wandering instead of just going left or right. You're wandering wherever you want to wander, and you stumble across locations like a graveyard. I found a ruined shack, a hill that had a tree on it with a bunch of people hanging from nooses. But I didn't find repeats of any of those things in the forest. And that stopped it from feeling quite so tedious and cheaty. Mm.
You said the mobile phone is your lifeline because it's your source of light and your map. Is there any threat, as in real life, of the batteries running out?
No, they never ran out for me. They stayed at like 2 bars of power for
what
the entire game.
What brand of phone is that?
It's a made-up one, but it's one that I want.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Did it have like wireless the whole way?
Yeah, and it has this map that, you know, fills itself in as you explore, which obviously... pretty useful.
That's a good app.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where did you get this?
Man.
So it's got 3G, obviously, connectivity, but you can't use it to email or call for help? There's no bars of reception?
No, you get no bars of reception. Damn. And there's this one Vincent Pricey-sounding guy who uses the phone to contact you and say, you know, rubbishy, spooky stuff, and that's it for your actual use of the phone as a phone.
So, like, that's the only contact that you've got in there is just creepy old man.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you should delete that guy.
I would,
list.
Yeah.
So he's the thing that gives you clues about the story, who's slowly sort of trying to unravel this thing for you. And the notes that you find also have bits of story about how this place got here and why it's so messed up. But the story is actually just a pile of cliches, really typical stuff. Like, they built this place on a sinkhole, and in the past they had a witch burning here. And at one point somebody even mentions, like, maybe it was a Native American burial ground, because, like, they've just run out of cliches
right.
at that
but
point.
They've never been
put them all in.
They've never been piled on top of one another like that.
Not often, no. Mm. No, I can't think of it.
Was it also like a Dracula castle as well at one point?
And, probably.
And telemarketers used to work there.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, just all the horrors. Mm-hmm. So I think a horror game needs to be more than just scary. Because, I mean, walking out my front door and into a cobweb is scary, but I don't want to repeat that experience. So this game, even though it is genuinely frightening, I was afraid repeatedly while I was playing it. Mm. Sometimes the ghosts trap you in this alternate world where all of the doors are locked, and you have to, like, get past one of them to get back to the real world, and, like, the real world is spooky as hell too. So you're just going from one creepy place to a creepier place. That worked on me, but because the story that it's telling, this mystery you're unraveling, it's not very intriguing. It's kind of rubbish. And the characters, the character you're playing and the character you're talking to over the phone, I didn't care about either of them. I didn't really care if they lived or died or turned out to be the killer. They're just there.
Right.
And the locations, because of the random generation, weren't real enough for me to be interested in exploring them. There was nothing apart from the scariness to keep me playing daylight. Like, I need those things. I need, you know, Silent Hill is a great town to just wander around in. There are other horror games where I care about the characters, or I care about the story and the clues that it's giving me about whatever weird event has happened to make the world messed up. And this doesn't have any of those things.
We've been talking about Daylight, which is available for the PC.
And PS4.
Thanks a lot for that review, Jody.
Cheers.
Next up, we'll be talking about Child of Light. You're listening to Zed Games.
Hello and welcome back to Zed Games. Now, Lee, you've been playing a new Ubisoft game called Child of Light this week.
Yes, I have. I have been playing Child of Light, which is available on the PC, the Xbox 360, the PS3 as well. Is it on the fancier systems?
Yes, it's on both Xbox One and PS4, and the Wii U as well.
Ah, there you go. Yes, it is a 2D side-scrolling, whimsical fairy tale that has aspects of JRPGs interwoven within it. It has beautiful hand-drawn art, a wonderful soundtrack, and the entire story is delivered in rhyme, for good or ill. Razor, you have been playing as well.
Yes, so the story is it's quite fairy tale-ish. You play the daughter of an Austrian king. Mm-hmm. Her name's Aurora, yeah. And she gets trapped in a coma. Put into a coma, and when she's there, she enters this fairy tale land. It's kind of Alice in Wonderland like in that mm-hmm. regard, where she wakes up, she doesn't know what's going on. There's all sorts of fantastic and crazy characters, and the world doesn't really make sense in relation to the real world. Mm.
So she's a princess?
Yes, but she doesn't like being referred to as a princess.
Right. She wears a crown the whole time,
yeah.
Which grants her some kind of magical abilities, I think.
Yeah, so she, very early on in her adventures, encounters the Queen of Light, who grants her the power of flight as well as magical starlight powers. She has a little sidekick who is a firefly that you can also control, and you have to seek out the sun, the moon, and the stars to find your way home and save the kingdom from the Queen of Darkness. And it is quite a simple story. There's no further investigation. You know, it's not any kind of Gaiman-esque deconstruction of fairy tales. It just is what it says on the tin. But it's often hard to realize that there's nothing all that interesting going on because of the fact that the whole story is delivered to you as a series of rhyming couplets.
Right. Do the characters talk in rhyme or just the narration?
The characters talk in rhyme as well. Yeah, every conversation you have is in rhyme. Ray, the rhyming.
Yeah, the rhyming, it got on my nerves a little bit. It's not the fact that it was all rhymes, but it was like the meter that it was delivered in wasn't poetic,
yeah,
really. So it was like a kind of a forced rhyme where they knew they had to rhyme every line. You know, the sort of meter of the phrases wasn't in any sort of artistic or poetic way, so it kind of felt a bit forced. And after a few hours of that, I just wish that they didn't have the rhyming thing at all.
Yeah, it grates almost immediately because they not only have... Yeah, the meter of it is just incomprehensible, but they also abuse language in general to fit in with this rhyming theme. So quite simple information is being passed around, but you don't really take that in because you have to try and translate this awful, awful poetry into something that makes any kind of sense at all. And often, like, the rhymes are never great anyway. It would be fine if they abused the language just so that they could at least land on a proper rhyme, but they're very loose.
Yeah, some of it's okay.
Yeah.
It is. The problem is that it's delivered through text. There's not much spoken word in this. Maybe if it was spoken, it would be different, but you either have to sort of read it in your head or read it aloud. And you're reading in your head, it doesn't have the same impact as like a poem written, like a rhyming poem or lyrics read aloud.
Yeah, like if they wanted it to be... to have the feeling of good poetry that doesn't necessarily need to rhyme, that would have been one thing. But because they specifically said, not rhyming couplets, here we go, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
So what are you doing when you're not reading rhymes? You can fly?
Yeah, you've got... there are platform-like levels where you fly and float around. And flying is actually... it feels great. You've got weight, you've got some momentum, you're affected by wind. You feel like, you know, you are a little girl with fairy wings shooting around this place.
And does your hair look amazing? You are a princess.
Yes.
Yeah, and it flows. There are liquid physics on it, so it's flowing behind you in a quite pleasant way. You are traversing this landscape mostly. There are monsters around. You can use your firefly to stun them and then shoot past, which requires a little bit of dexterity and is quite fun to do. But if you don't do that, then you find yourself taken to the battle screen where you're suddenly thrown into these Japanese RPG-style active time bar battles.
Yeah, there are also some simple environmental puzzles that are used by using the Firefly, which is controlled by the right stick.
Yeah.
So you control both the Firefly and Aurora, the main character, at the same time using the controller. And you sort of have to light up little things that move objects to traverse through the levels.
Yeah.
Although there is the capability for a second player to hook up a second controller and control the Firefly. And I I guess if you're playing on the Wii U, which has the tablet controller, this would be fun as well. It's kind of like Rayman Legends.
So I quite liked the flying around was quite enjoyable, and I enjoyed the puzzles using the Firefly. I thought that was fun, although they didn't really explore that enough. I was expecting a bit more of that in the game. And the experience of sitting down to play it, you know, when you're going through these windswept, semi-abandoned forests, or you're fluttering around a town that is populated by mice that are obsessed with the finances and the economy. That's
of course they are.
That's pretty great. Yes, these rat race.
Are they all about the cheddar?
Yeah. Yes, they are. Nice one. That's very good, actually.
Yes. So when you encounter an enemy, you're taken to a separate screen, much like in Japanese role-playing games. You've got your sort of exploration phase, and then when you hit an enemy, you're taken, you know, the screen.
Yeah, it does
swirls, that. Yeah. And then you enter a separate combat system. This is kind of like a. It's a bit like those old Final Fantasy games that are a cross between real-time and turn-based gameplay. So you've got one bar down the bottom, and each of the characters in the battle has an icon that moves along the bar. And when you get to the end, you can have a go. And also there's a red part at the end of the bar where if you are struck while you're casting, you get interrupted.
It's mechanically quite complex. And there is a lot going on. It's a neat system. I really like the idea of having to deal with the trade-off of, you know, you can see that you've got a character that you want to be able to do something, but you know that if they act now, they're going to get interrupted, so you have to, you know, make them suddenly defensive, and then that changes up the timing of, you know, their next action. So all of that stuff is really, really cool. But my problem with it was that I felt like this belonged in a very different game, because the exploration stuff is so whimsical, and so, you know, there was a gentleness to that, where suddenly you're engaged in quite an active activity of what comes down to staring at a bar as well, and watching heads move along a bar while beautiful artwork is happening somewhere else. I found that really jarring, even though I could recognize that the mechanics of it were quite interesting. Ray, how did you find the combat?
I found it a bit overwhelming at first with all the things going on, but once I got my head around it and got to grips with it, I was quite enjoying it. I thought it was pretty good. But then as the game progressed, it never really gains in complexity. I mean, those old JRPGs that I love, it starts out almost mind-numbingly simple. So you just have one attack and then you have to do it. But by the end of the game, I mean, you're juggling a million different things and different elements and different statuses and things like that over a, you know, party of three. In this case, it never really got that much more complex.
Yeah, your characters start with the abilities that they'll have at the end, essentially. They just level them up as you go along. The fights are just, they're kind of wedged in there. And if you can appreciate the system, you might get a lot more out of that than I did.
Look, I'm a fan of Japanese role-playing games, so I'm used to having that separate battle system and sort of being taken out of the exploration of the world and thrown into a random battle where all of a sudden it's a totally different experience. I think that might be a part of the reason why I'm enjoying this game more than Lee.
Yeah. But see, what I was after was the, you know, I wanted all of the stuff that the art is evoking to be the game, and to find out that the game was actually this much more mechanically busy JRPG fight system was a bit of a letdown. And then to then discover that the story was shallower than I would have liked was just the nail in the coffin for me.
I like the combat. I love skill trees. I love watching numbers appear on the screen, and I love taking turns and hitting the battles.
I wish it's not even a skill tree though, Ray. It's just, this is literally selecting which number gets bigger next time. You don't really make any decisions.
You do gain different unique abilities along some of the way, but most of the time you're just pumping stats, yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, making a number bigger over another number to me isn't, that's not an interesting decision.
I can appreciate your view, but yeah. For me, making numbers bigger is sweet.
Okay.
Now, just before we wrap up, I think we should talk about the art and the music, which aesthetically, this game is absolutely beautiful to watch. I mean, there's watercolors. Everything is hand-painted. Mm, it's like a living painting.
Yeah, like it's a beautiful, beautiful game to watch and to listen to in particular. The soundtrack is fantastic, and hopefully we'll be able to play some of that for you listeners maybe a later episode.
No, we've got one to play at the end of this episode.
Good, at the end of this episode. It's magnificent. My favorite track was in the Mouse Town. I thought that was wonderful. But at the same time, this is using the UbiArt engine, which they developed for the Rayman games. And I thought that in this game, again, as beautiful as the environments were, they're also quite static. And there wasn't any real interaction with the environments. There was some basic physics stuff, but for all of that beauty, there was nothing behind it. You know, you were just in big, empty maps of trees. So, again, disappointed that there wasn't more to it.
I didn't get that empty feeling that you did. I felt like an overwhelming melancholy and sadness of this, like, lost little girl trying to find her way around.
I got that, but then when I tried to play the game, there wasn't one there.
I think we'll have to disagree on this one, Lee.
Yes. No stars.
5 stars from Razor. All right, that's going to bring us to the end of this episode, guys. As usual, thanks for listening. You can find us on the internet on Facebook, ZGamesAU, Twitter, ZGamesAU as well. We've also got a blog, ZGamesAU.net. Remember, we need your help to keep community radio all across Australia alive. Get to commit to communityradio.org.au, and it only takes like 1 or 2 minutes to email the treasurer and let him know that you value the services that community radio and broadcasting provides. Righto, we'll catch you guys next week. To end this show, we're going to hear from the Child of Light soundtrack, and this one's called Aurora's Theme. All right, catch you next week, guys.
Bye. Bye.